Hey there, podcast listeners. This is Justin from Beyond the Uniform. My goal is to give active duty military personnel the tools they need to make a successful transition to a civilian career, whether that's 30 years from now or a few months from now. This week, I am speaking with Taylor Justice, quite possibly one of the most comic book hero type names I've ever heard. And in real life, he is a superhero as well. He transitioned from the Army after a few years. He was medically discharged unexpectedly. He speaks to what that's like, what he found helpful in making that very unexpected transition. And he ended up, after a couple different industries and time at Columbia Business School, founding a company called Unite Us, which coincidentally also helps veterans. Unite Us has raised over $6 million of venture capital funding, over 20 employees. They're having a big impact on the world and veteran community. So this is a great interview for anyone thinking about entrepreneurship, starting your own company, raising capital. Anyone who wants to learn more about how to transition from active duty, scout the landscape, use your network to find your first, second, and third jobs. And just in general, Taylor is a very well-spoken, energizing guy. I think it's a very motivational talk for pretty much anyone. So here is Taylor Justice on the life of startups. Just a little bit of background before we dive in. So Taylor graduated from West Point in 2006. He received his Bachelor of Science in Latin American Studies and Environmental Engineering and was part of the football team. He served as an infantry officer in the Army and was medically discharged. Went into the medical devices industry at a company called CCS Medical before moving into the computer networking industry at Viavi Solutions. In 2009, he co-founded Higher Echelon, a service disabled veteran-owned human organizational performance consulting firm, and then went on to get his MBA from Columbia Business School. At Columbia, he founded the company, or co-founded the company, Unite Us, which we'll spend the bulk of our time talking about, where he currently serves as the chief business officer. So Taylor, I guess to start off, I'd love to learn about your transition from active duty and what that process was like as part of the medical discharge.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, my situation was probably similar to some folks in the sense of my Army career was cut short. Coming out of West Point, had a 5-year active duty commitment. 3 years in active reserve. I actually made my 3 years of inactive reserve time active to ensure that I was an infantry officer. So I was locked in for at least 8 years, and that's kind of what I was focused on. But unfortunately, before I hit my 2-year mark, I was medically discharged and faced with this new reality of transitioning into the civilian sector, thinking about a new career. And there were challenges, you know, dealing with the VA, finding a new job, finding a place to live were things that I thought were going to be taken care for me, at least for the next 8 years. And I was fortunate enough to be able to fall back on my West Point network and connect into some junior military officer recruiting firms. But it was a challenge nonetheless of really figuring out, what am I going to do next? Where is my new passion going to lie? And to be honest, it took a little while to find it.
I bet. I mean, it seems like most of the people I speak with, like everyone knows that transition is going to come, whether it's at 20 years or 10 years or 8 years. And so, you know, to some extent, most people are able to prepare a few years in advance. But I'm just putting myself in your position of like having only a year or two, not even thinking about that as a potential and then being thrust into it. It's that would be a lot on top of, you know, having looked forward to that 8 years of service and then having plans change unexpectedly. I imagine that's a lot to deal with.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think it was different too, because a lot of the people that I went to West Point with, even those that were seniors when I were freshmen, were still in the military, right? So they hadn't even reached their 5-year mark. So I was relying on a few folks that I knew that had graduated a few years prior to me that were medically discharged, and they were still trying to figure out what they wanted to do. And I was just learning from their path and then talking to older graduates that had, you know, 10 or 20 years under their belt in the civilian sector. And but even their transition was different than mine and where they were going, because, you know, more often than not, they weren't medically discharged early. They had a substantial military career, at least 5 years, but majority had longer than that. So, you know, just trying to figure out and navigate what's my next step. It wasn't necessarily strategic at that moment. It was very tactical. Find a job, find a place to live, and then figure it out from there. So, you know, my transition was more of, I knew I had around 6 months or so before I would go through the medical evaluation board process, just because that's just the process that the Army takes. So I was really proactive in trying to understand what options were available to me, go on as many interviews as possible, and just try to get a sense of what's out there. But I did spend a lot of time picking up the phone and just reaching out to people that I had never met before. The only commonality that we had is that we either both went to West Point, or that we were both in the military.
Man, I didn't think about that, but the thought that your peer group from West Point was not even in the civilian marketplace yet is an added challenge, because that's the first place I would think to go to is my classmates or people close by. But you were in many ways a pioneer of having to go through this years before them without having them as a resource, which would be challenging.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I really think it's set up what I'm doing today, because I always considered it, I wasn't going to be able to have the traditional military career that I wanted to. I came from a military family. You know, my father was 30 years active duty in the Air Force, decorated war hero, Silver Star recipient. You know, so I considered this as like, this was my way of giving back. I would be this recon unit of the civilian sector, where I could try to just figure out what options were available to folks. And then when people were transitioning, you know, years down the road, I could be an ally for them. So I kind of took it on not only figuring out my own thing, but knowing that other folks were going to come into a similar situation down the road. This was my opportunity to try to figure it out for them as well.
I love that, because it's a situation that was unexpected. And I'm imagining very jarring, and then in retrospect, seeing how this unexpected, at the time, what I'm imagining was a very disappointing event, turned into being, you know, an incredible foundation of a company that's raised over $6 million in funding with over 20 employees. I mean, it's cool to think that the unexpected challenge ended up benefiting you in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, I think through my whole story from the time that I left the military up until where I'm at now, everything kind of goes back to that situation that I dealt with, you know, those few short months where I was just kind of in limbo, if you will. It's kind of a recurring theme that it just keeps playing in my head, where I kind of keep coming back to that as the thing that has led me down this current path. I always came back when I was lost or trying to get involved with a community initiative or whatnot. It was always coming back and looking at the veteran and military community as a way to help folks that are going through something that I experienced.
That's great. And I guess putting yourself back in the shoes when you first made that transition, I'm wondering what resources you found most helpful. So you mentioned speaking to other veterans. You mentioned briefly kind of a recruiting firm. How did you go about finding that first job with CCS Medical? And any advice for people who are taking that first step?
Yeah, so I'll break that into two things. One is who I found most beneficial. It was always talking to someone else that had been through the experience. So I was very proactive, and I think I said this earlier, but extremely proactive in reaching out to anybody and everybody that I felt could help out. And luckily for me, majority of people picked up the phone. You know, there was a few that saw me as maybe I didn't go through a similar path to them. And so they were kind of just saying, oh, well, you didn't do this and you didn't do this. So, you know, it's you're probably not a fit for my industry, which wasn't helpful. But the majority of folks are like, listen, I understand the situation that you're in. Let me just give you a data dump on my industry, some areas that you might have interest in, and you can tell me yes or no if that's something you like. And if so, let's figure out the next step. If not, hey, at least you know. And so it was always talking to someone else that had some knowledge on either the situation that I was in or just knew their industry inside and out and can say, hey, here are some possible avenues that you could look at. And it really came down to you're either going to be on the operations side of house, running something or supporting some initiative or some sort of process, or you're going to be selling something. Which one do you think that you're really good at? And I always kind of gravitated to the sales side of things. And then that's really what I honed in on. And from there, it's like, okay, what industry do I think I would be interested in? And so how I came to CCS Medical is I leveraged a bunch of these recruiting firms, so junior military officer recruiting firms. And, you know, they're great and they put you in front of folks, but I always had this feeling of I was kind of just this guy that was being thrown up against the wall and hoping I stuck on something. And, you know, predominantly there's a large number of medical device sales companies that are at these types of events. And that's kind of just where I found a home initially. I think I was a little naive in the very beginning, where I was just like, I want to find something that's going to allow me to make some money and control my own destiny. You know, the typical sales cliche. And I took a job based more on the potential earnings than on if I was really interested in it. And don't get me wrong, I interviewed with, I believe, in a couple week period, 11 different companies, and I had offers from all of them. And I ultimately decided on CCS Medical because it was in a geography that I wanted to be in, New York City. And there was this upside. It was a newer market that was kind of underperforming, and I just saw it as a challenge to say, okay, if I can make it within this sector that hasn't really performed that well, or excuse me, this region of the company that hasn't performed that well, and they said it was more about effort than anything else, I was like, okay, I think I can do well here. And I took the job, and I did very well. I succeeded. I grew the territory by something like 200 or 300%. Within my first couple months. And it was with a company that would get doctors to write prescriptions on our forms rather than sending them to a local pharmacy. And it was more about just winning over the doctor and having them use your form rather than, you know, the form that they currently used. And so after you start reaching in, out to doctors and having relationships, you know, you start to do well. And once you have them, they just kind of start using your forms. But I didn't like the industry after a few months. I hated the process of going from being an infantry officer where you're supposed to be leading a certain group of people and you're kind of the decision maker on the ground, and then going into this environment where you talk to a doctor and they don't care who you are. There's no respect there. And it was, in addition to not liking the industry, there was a huge ego punch. I just didn't like it. And so I was looking for something else that would be a little bit more challenging. And I'm an Army football player, and I had previously interviewed with a Navy football player at a different company. It was at the time was called JDSU. It was recently called, switched its name. And I reached back out to him. I said, you know what? I feel like I made a bad decision. Can we talk? And he's like, yeah, there's actually an opening in the Northeast. I'll link you up with the hiring manager there. I had a couple conversations. There was a lot of military veterans within the company, and I made the switch after, I believe it was 8 months with CCS Medical. So I wasn't there long. But with JDSU, I really learned how to sell. And I really feel like I cut my teeth and learned a lot from that organization.
So a couple questions that came out of that. This is really interesting. I'm wondering, first of all, I loved your discussion of kind of the outreach process and the hustle when you were contacting different veterans and getting that feel for what they did. And for someone on active duty who might not have had to do that process before, how did you do that? Were you finding people on LinkedIn? And then how were you finding their contact information? And any advice on how to structure that process of outreach?
Yeah. So again, this kind of falls back to the benefit of West Point. Is they had their own internal, I guess, LinkedIn, if you will, where you could filter people by geography, by industry, by a bunch of different parameters. And I literally just started picking up the phone and emailing as well, and just reaching out to anybody and everybody. West Point, and it's a service academy network. So it's not just West Point, it's the Naval Academy, Air Force, Coast Guard, and a few others that are in this database. And I literally just started reaching out to everybody in different industries and just started to learn. I didn't leverage LinkedIn that much, to, if I'm being perfectly honest. And that's, this is something coming back to where I'm at today with Unite Us, was just like, okay, if I didn't go to West Point, I wasn't lucky enough to have this network, what would I do? And I didn't have good answers. I didn't know. And so I always kind of came back to that as like, I was fortunate, but there's a lot of folks that, you know, deserve this way more than I do. What are they going to do?
That's great. And I'm going to skip over a bunch of questions because I want to focus more on Unite Us. But I'm just wondering, in the, let's just say, the first 2 years out of the Army, how did you feel like the military most prepared you for your role in sales and account executive? And where did you feel furthest behind your counterparts from the military, from your counterparts having come from a military background?
Yeah, so I mean, from a military perspective, I mean, I think it's just, you know, taking the initiative, not being afraid to just go out and act. I mean, I feel like a lot of folks will sit back and make no decision. And in the Army, they always teach you no decision is the wrong decision. So even if it's right or wrong, you'll find out pretty quickly and you can course correct in real time. So from that perspective, it's just like I don't want to say it's fear, but it's this motivation for bias of action, right? It's just get out there, make decisions, get in front of people, even if it doesn't have to be perfect, but just get out there and you're going to learn something, and then you can move on to the next phase or to the next person, and you're a little bit smarter. So from a military perspective, it was that, I guess, ability to just get after it. And then there was the other aspect of kind of like backwards planning, saying, okay, based off the information that I have right now, here's my ultimate goal. I want to get a job by this date. I need to get in front of this many people. If I get these certain offers, then I could probably have a job by this date. And it's just kind of putting that plan in motion and just being adaptable to what happens. And then, you know, just having this positive attitude that something's going to happen for you. I think the second part of your question was, where did I feel like I was behind? I think going back to being very proactive, I mean, if I wasn't proactive, I would have been in a world of hurt. From an Army's perspective, when I was going through the transition program, there wasn't a lot there for me. They kind of throw everybody into a room and say, hey, here's how to write a resume. But that's like basic level things. That's like what everyone else has. There's no advantage there necessarily, other than, okay, maybe I went to a school, so maybe that might bump me up against somebody else. But not understanding industries, not having people to reach out to, like from an Army perspective and going through the transition, I don't feel like I was prepared very well, other than, hey, here's a bunch of resources on a piece of paper that you might want to reach out to. And so it was very difficult. I think I wasn't that prepared for my transition from an Army or military perspective, other than being comfortable in ambiguous situations. I don't know if that's helpful, but
yeah, no, totally. And I bet this dovetails nicely into my next question. So skipping over, you know, quite a bit of your story to get into Unite Us, yeah. I'm wondering what led you to start Unite Us? Was that when you were in your first year at Columbia?
No. So, I mean, I had the idea for Unite Us, or a version of Unite Us. I don't want to take full credit for the idea, because Dan Broman and other members on the team, and they definitely had a different viewpoint, that when we kind of melded them together, came all together, right? So there's three of us here that are the co-founders: Dan Broman, Andrew Price, and myself. So I don't want to take all the credit, but I feel like there was a need for this well before I went to Columbia. And I was volunteering with a national nonprofit in their local chapter in Philadelphia. And this organization was focused on physical fitness and social activities. But as that chapter began to grow, we would have, you know, veterans and military families coming into the chapter that needed assistance outside of, you know, physical fitness and social activities, education, legal, employment, housing, you name it. And so we were always scrambling around trying to connect with resources within the community, public, private, nonprofit. And it was a whirlwind. It was so time consuming in a sense of you don't want to just say, hey, why don't you reach out to this organization and good luck. You want to kind of help them through that process and continually staying up to date. Like, hey, did you reach out? What did they say? Was it a good lead? No, let's find something else. And so, you know, we were really focused on supporting these folks from beginning to end, like all the way through to some sort of outcome. And so what I realized was community partners didn't have the ability to connect with each other very efficiently. And so we were using Excel sheets and Word documents trying to say, okay, you know, Taylor Justice is talking to this organization. I reached out to him here. Let me follow back up. And then, you know, the list goes on and on. And then when I was applying to Columbia Business School, I met Dan randomly. And so when I was applying to Columbia, they always link new applicants with current students. And if you're a veteran in military, they try to link those groups up. And so randomly, I was paired with Dan Brillman, and we just started talking about the admissions process at Columbia. That conversation ended up being 5 hours. Because within 15 minutes, we both realized that we had this shared connection for the fragmentation of resources and how people were connecting into the civilian sector. And that initial conversation spearheaded, you know, bringing Andrew Price into the fold because he and I worked previously at Higher Echelon together. Dan went on an appointment and we kept talking back and forth. And when he got back in December of 2012, we just said, let's do this. Let's just go build something. And so Columbia, while at Columbia, we started Unite Us, but, you know, my introduction to Dan was literally just talking about business school.
That's so crazy. It sounds like Columbia Business School has cracked something that online dating and a lot of Silicon Valley matchmaking partnership sites have not been able to do, which is effectively broker that relationship. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, I think there was a little luck there, but it was definitely, I don't know if meant to be is it, but I think there was a reason that we were paired up.
I know a common question I hear about is finding that co-founder. I'm wondering if there's any other advice you'd provide to someone on active duty who thinks they're going to start a company on how they might go about finding or vetting that potential partner for their company.
Yeah, I mean, I think it all starts with self-awareness. So you need to do an audit on your skills. What are you good at and what are you bringing to the table? Because you don't want to find a partner or a fellow co-founder that has the exact same skill set as you, because there's going to be a big void and you're going to miss things. And so I say you need to find that perfect yin and yang. And so I'm a very aggressive person. I like sales. I'm on that side of the house. Dan is very analytical, not as aggressive, but he thinks about things in a different way than I do. And so I think our skills complement each other in that sense where, you know, we're both going to look at things initially from a different lens, and we're both going to be very thoughtful on how we attack certain situations, but we're also going to be very, very demanding of each other and fight for our position. And so through that conflict, we always yield coming to the ultimate best decision for the company. And so I would say do the audit on yourself. What are you good at? What are you going to bring to the table? And then find somebody that has the skills that you don't. Something where you're going to lift them up and they're going to be able to lift you up, because, you know, this is an emotional roller coaster. And if you have two people looking through the exact same lens, it could cause problems. Now, you both need to have the exact same vision of where you want to go. But how you assess each other's skill sets and how you look at problems should be different.
That's great. And I'm curious, because you had industry experience and then business school and then you started your company. I'm wondering, for someone on active duty who's getting out and they're thinking of starting a company, do you think that that's a wise choice to do that straight out of the military? Do you think that it's necessary to have industry or graduate school experience, or any advice around that? If someone's thinking like, hey, I want to do this eventually, what's the best way to prepare for that?
Yeah, so I know that there are two sides of the coin on this, where people feel very strongly about, oh, you need to have industry experience, or you need to have an MBA or whatever before you can start a business. And then there's others that say, no, you don't need that. I am on the side of it depends. And the reason I say that is you need to have a clear understanding of who you are and what your skill sets are. So going back to that audit of what your skills are. You're not going to get everything that you need from industry experience or from an MBA, no matter how great of a school it is. There's still things that you can't learn until you're out there doing it. But you have to, no matter what path you go on, you have to have this deep desire to continue to learn and to educate yourself and take yourself through your own education process. So, I mean, I read all the time, any book that I can on, you know, I don't want to say self-help, but it's like around sales or management or just biographies of people that have done it before me. You know, I proactively try to find mentors that can say, you know what, that's probably not the best way to look at it. You should do it this way. I am so willing to ask for help and look dumb by asking stupid questions. I have no problem with that, because I feel like if I try to fake it and I lose an opportunity because I had this ego of I didn't want to look dumb, then that's the dumb move. So no matter what route you go, listen, if you put tools in your toolbox of going back to school or having industry experience, it's not going to limit you. You just might, it might take a little bit longer for you to start your idea. The fall of that, though, is you might get comfortable. You might get into a situation where you feel like you can't leave. You know, as time passes, you get married, you have children, you know, you have financial commitments. And the entrepreneurial life initially is not lucrative. And even as you're building out a business, I mean, we've been doing this for 4 years. And I think, you know, we are still very, very conscious of costs and making sure that we aren't paying ourselves like these crazy salaries, because we're still trying to get there. We're still trying to build this business and we want to stay hungry. And so if you go down that route, it's not a bad thing, but just realize that if you ultimately want to start a business, that it's going to get harder and harder the more you get, you know, within that industry or that job. Now, it's still going to be hard if you try to start something out of the gate, but you have to be willing to listen to a bunch of folks, take their advice, but ultimately you have to make the decision, because no one's going to know your business better than you are. No one's going to know the situations that you're dealing with, and so you need to get a lot of different viewpoints on what's happening. And so if you feel that you can handle that, you can build something, you don't need industry experience, you don't need an MBA. But if you need that assurance, you need that fallback plan, it's not a bad idea to go into to get a corporate job or to go get your MBA. But to answer your question, it really depends on who the individual is.
I think that's very well put. And I do like this trend that keeps on coming back to self-knowledge and honesty around skills and natural ability and natural desire and things like that, of just really knowing what each person wants, knowing that each person's path will be different, knowing that each person brings different skills to the table, and coming back to like just really being honest with themselves on what is the right move for them in that moment. And I do agree that there is that inertia to overcome, that the more time goes on, the more you get accustomed to a certain lifestyle and salary, it does become harder to take that jump that, you know, typically for entrepreneurship is a prolonged period of going without and a prolonged period of really intense working environments. And that was the next thing I wanted to ask you about, was what was the initial stages of starting a company like, especially for someone on active duty, painting that picture of what was the day-to-day life like and the feeling of being in that startup environment?
Yeah, so I mean, I think a lot of people want to start businesses because they get wrapped up into this, they think it's the sexy lifestyle or it's like the trendy thing to do right now. But I don't know who said it, so I'm definitely stealing this from someone else, but you're going to work twice as long for half the money. I mean, it is literally an emotional roller coaster where some days you're like, what in the world am I doing? I am failing at this. And other days where it's like the highs of highs. And so, you know, I knew in the very beginning stages, if my day started off great, it was going to end terribly. It's just, that's just the flow that was happening. And then over time, those good times would last a little bit longer, but the down times would last a little bit longer. And then over time again, like the good times, it just started to still be good, but you had different challenges. So it's just kind of, it was a different roller coaster at that point. So you have to be able to deal with the highest highs and the lowest of lows and be comfortable with that. And so I don't think that ever changes, even from the very beginning stages. They're just different challenges that you face. Like in the beginning, you're trying to get traction. You're trying to get people to believe you on this idea that no one else has done or that people have tried to do before, but they failed. Why are you different? And you're telling the same story and you're having the same conversations, and it's never going to move as fast as you want. So you have to be able to deal with however long you think it's going to take for you to make your first sale, probably double it or triple it. And it's just being able to have the mindset of, I know I'm thinking about this the right way. I know I have the solution. I'm not going to give up on it. But then it comes back to that self-awareness of when is enough enough. And so when is it, do I realize that my venture is either good or it isn't? And no one's going to know that but you. And if you aren't honest with yourself, you're not going to be able to have those types of conversations. And so I've been a part of two companies that were two completely different fields. One was a government consulting firm where you're putting butts in seats and you're building out products for the military. And another one was obviously, and we built that from the ground floor, higher echelon, for, you know, zero money. It was just, you know, three guys that started the company and were in it for the long haul. Unitas was a little bit different. You had to have like this large influx of capital so that we could put the technology together, build the team, and start to get after it. And so it's just, what type of business do you want to be in? What are the resources that you need associated to that? Do you have a network that can help facilitate, getting business or raising funding or doing things of that nature? If not, then maybe you should spend some time to develop that network first before you jump in head first. And it's really, again, that backwards planning. What am I trying to build? What are the resources that I need? Who are the people that I need to talk to? Do I have this? Yes or no? And then build and then attack that. So I mean, it's an interesting dynamic, but I guess the common theme here is just knowing yourself, being honest with yourself, and then attacking whatever weak areas or areas that you need to get your business off the ground.
Yeah, I mean, everything you're saying really resonates with my experience as well. And that roller coaster component in particular is so true, where I think that so much of your identity, or I'll just make it personal, so much of my identity becomes intertwined with the success on a daily basis of the company. And like you said, you start off feeling great and a genius, and at the end of the day, you feel like an idiot, and vice versa. And right. So it can be so hard to have, I think in contrast to the military, where you've got a strong unit and you've got a strong sense of community and you kind of ride those waves together. But on the startup, you're just this lone boat in the middle of the ocean, and it can be very isolating to go through the tremendous ups and downs that come on a daily, if not hourly, basis. And I think you explained that really well. I'm curious, I'm imagining that over the last couple of years, you've probably come across a lot of different veterans who are seeking to start their own business. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you have a sense of either like common misconceptions that military personnel have about starting a company, or kind of common mistakes that you see people make when they go to start their first venture.
Yeah, I mean, I think the list is long, but I think I see a lot of common things that happen where the first one that I always try to correct with folks is, I've never been in the tech industry, so I probably can't raise any money. And that is just so wrong on so many levels. You're selling yourself first and foremost. You know, you're going to have this pitch deck, and it's going to talk about your business. You're going to have these financials that literally mean nothing because every investor knows that they're probably pretty lofty or that's not actually how things are going to shake out, but they want to see how you think through things. I feel like a lot of people get scared's not the right word, but they have misconceptions that they don't have the skill set to start a business or ask people for money. And I think that's just the wrong approach. I mean, in entrepreneurship in general, you have to have unwavering confidence in yourself and your idea and sell that to anybody and everybody. I don't care what position you are in a company, either you're the CTO or the CEO or a COO, everybody's selling. And so if you don't have that ability to say, I know what I'm talking about and here's why, you're gonna face challenges. And so from a raising funding standpoint, if you're a technology company, is something that I feel like a lot of people are scared of just because they don't know that space that well. But it goes back to what I was saying before, like no decision is the wrong decision. So just get out there, make some mistakes, take some licks on the chin, learn from it, and then attack it again. Now, I would get advice from folks before I start reaching out to every VC shop out there, but it's leveraging the network, learning from people that have done it before, getting honest feedback on what you're doing and if they think it's viable. And people are going to give you their honest opinion. People want to give you their expertise and their advice. And so go into every conversation just looking for advice, and sometimes good things happen from that, right? And so don't go in there asking for funding or asking for whatever. Just ask for some advice, and people will help you along the way. So I think it's just taking the first step and going. I think a lot of people hold back and saying, oh, my idea needs to be perfect, or I need to think about these financials even more. It's like, no, you don't. You just need to start going. Like, just start talking to anybody and everybody you can, and your pitch is going to start to hone and polish itself. If you keep it all into yourself and you wait for that big day before I get in front of a VC shop, you're going to fail. And so I think it's just taking that first step is one of the common mistakes that I see from most vets.
I agree. And I hear a lot, not necessarily from veterans, but I hear a lot this concern around not wanting to share an idea out of fear that someone will steal it. And I echo what you're saying, and that you have so much to gain by talking about it with everyone and anyone and getting advice and getting feedback and getting all of this input. And it always jars me a little bit when people are so concerned about their idea that they're unwilling to share it, because it's hard to imagine an idea growing and taking a life of its own without all of these thousands of external inputs that come from dinner conversations and VC meetings and meeting with friends and meeting with strangers and talking to every single person and getting this variety of inputs that ultimately litters this idea with different fingerprints that I think helps it succeed.
Yeah, and I think that too. Like, I when I hear that from folks, that's an immediate red flag for me that they haven't done their homework. You know, it's like you haven't put in the work yet to understand this space, because every VC and every major person that's writing about blogs or has ever started a company is telling you not to do that. Yep. You know, so it's like you haven't put in the work yet, so you're not ready. I know you're not ready yet. Yeah, and so from my perspective, it's if you think that your idea is so great, and if you tell someone that they have the ability to build that company as well as you do, then you should not start that business.
That's a good litmus test. Yeah.
Not ready. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, for people who may be listening on active duty right now, what would you want them to know about Unite Us and how they might benefit, or engage with you?
Yeah, so I mean, Unite Us started off as personal pain point. It was my own experience. It was Dan's experience, and Andrew, who didn't serve but is super patriotic and was always helping people, trying to connect to resources. We built Unite Us. We're a software as a service company, so SaaS for those that understand what that means. And we sell software to service providers. And so Unite Us builds coordinated networks. So if you think about a healthcare system and you go to your primary care physician and you need to see a specialist, be it, you know, an orthopedic surgeon or whatever, they have a network and they have the ability to connect you to those resources where you don't have to do that legwork on your own. But in the human and social services sector, that doesn't exist. Those connections between, you know, a housing provider, maybe a employment provider, they're not co-located. They don't interact with each other as often as they should. So there's this fragmentation of resources, public, private, nonprofit. So you have the VA, DOD, nonprofit organizations, education institutions, employers that are not connecting into each other, but everybody's trying to help veterans. And we just saw that as an opportunity. It was like, what if we brought these organizations together on a common platform and we coordinate the supply? So everyone that's trying to receive these services, if we could bring these organizations together where they're operating on a common platform in a HIPAA compliant, secure space, where if a veteran walks into an employment provider and that employment provider starts to facilitate that care and connect them to resources, and they also realize, oh, this person needs to find, you know, a new place to live because they're just moving to the area, or they might be eligible for some VA benefits. I need to connect them to the VA, or they need to check out this program. Before, that referral was happening through phone call or email, which is very, very cumbersome on the service provider. So within our system now, they can say, oh, I'm dealing with your employment case, but you're identifying these other needs. Let me, through Unite Us, connect you to this provider. So now providers have a holistic view of when Taylor Justice walks in the room, he's receiving employment assistance from this organization. This organization over here is helping him with his housing need. This individual is helping with his educational need. And if I need to coordinate with those other organizations, I can. And it provides this real-time data on what's happening within the community. So now we can draw correlations. So you come to a big city like New York, and we see that, you know, 60% of people that are requesting assistance with healthcare also need assistance with employment. And we see an uptick on healthcare. We know that there's going to be these second and third order effects on, okay, do we have enough employment resources? Do we have enough housing resources? Do we have enough legal resources to facilitate care? And each community that we deal with, you know, things are a little bit different, but those foundational elements are the same. So from a Unite Us perspective, we want to connect all those dots. So we don't want a veteran to say, okay, I don't know where to go. In our world, once we're at scale, every door is going to be the right door. You're going to have access to this greater network, and we're going to be able to track and make sure that your requests for assistance are handled in an appropriate time, and then you're up to speed on what's happening. So you're in the know, and you know what's available to you. You know, previously that didn't exist. And so, you know, we've been launching coordinated networks across the country for almost 2 years now. We're in 14 different city states. We'll be at 25. If we were to stop today, we'd be at 25 by the end of the year. And I think, you know, a few big opportunities are about to hit where we will be able to cover the nation here very shortly. So it's very exciting.
That's great. I mean, it's one of those ideas that when you hear about it, you think, why didn't something like this exist sooner? And it's also great where you've started a company where everyone is winning with this. You are helping a lot of people, and it's good to see companies with a very pure mission like that that's making a positive difference on the world.
No, thank you. I really appreciate that. And what we found, though, I mean, even in this veteran and military community, what we found were the needs and the challenges of this community were not unique. You know, they're no different than the regular population. It's just what avenue they come from might be a little bit different. But what we found was the veteran and military community is this perfect petri dish of American society. When you look at socioeconomic status, race, age, that the majority of these coordinated networks that we were developing were not just veteran service organizations or the VA or DOD. They're nonprofit or city government programs that just have a veteran initiative. So this month we've expanded out of just the veteran and military community to support all populations. But I think in history, when you look at what the military and even the VA has done for advancements for the entire population, it's no different here. We just started with a population that we knew, and it just happened to be the perfect, again, petri dish of American society. And we're saying, okay, we've proven the model here. Now we can do this for all human and social services. Doesn't matter which country you're in or what program, as long as there are multiple organizations that are providing multiple different services and they need the ability to connect to each other, we have a solution.
That's great. That's great. Well, I know we're short on time here, but I guess last question I would throw out is just anything else, anything I didn't cover, anything you'd want someone on active duty to know about the transition or resources or advice or any last thoughts?
The only thing that I would tell folks, and it's not necessarily anything about Unite Us, but you know, as you start to make this transition, asking for help is the smart move. Thinking that you have everything figured out, or thinking that if you're going to be bothering someone asking for assistance or learning about what they're doing, that's the fool's road. And so I would just urge people to not be scared, to not be afraid to reach out to people, because if you don't, you're just hurting yourself. Pick up the phone, call a buddy, call a friend. If you don't have a network, start somewhere with a nonprofit or, you know, a community resource, and then just continue to build. Like, every day, work towards learning something new about a potential, you know, career path or opportunity that you might not have been aware of previously. You have to be proactive as you make this transition. If you're not, you're setting yourself up for failure. Successful folks are always reaching out, always networking, always trying to talk to someone that can provide some value. But don't just take. Find ways to give back. And there might not ever be a way to give back, but, you know, being very thankful and thoughtful for people that are giving you their time goes a long way. And there's a ton of people that are out there that want to help you. And if you ever get lost, you know, you can always come to uniteus.com. You can always reach out to me directly, and we'll figure it out together.
That's great. I mean, it definitely seems to go contrary to the stereotype of military, which is setting your own path, kind of full speed ahead, not asking for help. Help, you know, that's a sign of weakness. At least in a stereotype, that seems to be the case. And on the flip side, on the civilian side, you do have so much to benefit from, like you were saying about starting Unite Us, of asking questions, not feeling foolish of not knowing the answer, being vulnerable in what you don't know, and just getting anyone's feedback. And it does seem that that kind of comes as a transition from active duty, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hear that a lot. And even some of the networks that we go to, organizations will say, you know, well, this is the military community. They don't want to ask for help. They don't want to ask for a handout. Well, it's not a handout. You look at any top flyer out there that has gone to business school, or has gone to start their own company, or has got a great corporate job or anything. They didn't do it on their own. You know, it's just like in the military. You're not going to be able to go charge that hill by yourself. You know, you have a team that you surround yourself with. And so if you try to go at it alone, it's going to be very, very difficult for you. And even the data is proving in our networks, you know, 45 to 50% of all referrals that come into our network are self-referrals. It's kind of breaking down these walls of, oh, veterans don't want to ask for help. I've always challenged that. And previously it was more anecdotal, but now I have the data to prove it. It's just not true. It's those that are very successful have no problem picking up the phone or reaching out to people and putting themselves out there.
Well, this is great, Taylor. I think you're a role model in terms of, the path that you took from the military of just really in a scrappy way figuring out what you want to do, as well as starting something from the ground up that is having a positive impact on the world and the military community. So thank you for your time on this.
No, I appreciate it, Justin.
All right, folks, that's all for this week. Couple quick admin items. Show notes are at beyondtheuniform.io. You will find links to anything Taylor talked about that's linkable, as well as other interviews across the board of industries, of veterans, advice they have for you, as well as lots of data about different career possibilities, all at beyondtheuniform.io. Also, if you are not familiar with servicetoschool.org, definitely go to their website. I am not in any way compensated for giving a shout out to them, but they are a free service for any active duty military personnel, any veteran, in helping you get into college, grad school, med school, business school, wherever you want to go in the world of education. They are a free and very powerful resource for you at servicetoschool.org. Thanks. Have a great week, and we'll be back next week with more interviews.